So welcome our panelists. Our first guest tonight is actually the only one who's not an astronaut. Aerospace engineer, a retired Air Force F-86 pilot, flight director and manager for Gemini and most of the Apollo flights. He is a huge part and the heart and the soul of the space program. Welcome Gene Kranz. Next, he's a Marine fighter pilot and physicist. Worked for many years as a civilian at the RAND Corporation. Apollo 7, the first manned Apollo flight, retired Marine Colonel Walt Cunningham. Annapolis graduate, naval aviator, attack pilot, test pilot, flew two Gemini missions and two Apollo missions. Retired Navy captain, Jim Lovell. West Point graduate, Air Force fighter pilot, test pilot, master's degree in aeronautical engineering, flew Gemini 7 and Apollo 8. Air Force retired colonel, Frank Borman. Air Force and Navy fighter pilot, both engineer, research test pilot for NASA, flew Apollo 13, Fred Hayes. Another West Point graduate, Air Force fighter pilot, has a PhD from MIT in astronautics, flew Gemini 12 and Apollo 11, Buzz Aldrin. Air Force fighter pilot flew the F-100 and went to the test pilot school at Edwards. He is the youngest American astronaut flying the X-15 at age 32. He was backup crews for two Apollo flights, but also flew Cap Commander 2 STS shuttle missions, and is the only shuttle commander to pilot the shuttle from orbit to full stop landing at Edwards manually. This is retired Major General Joe Engel. And the poor guys whose name, last name ends in W get stuck all the time, darn it. West Point graduate, graduate engineer degrees, interceptor test pilot, flew Apollo 15, a retired Air Force Colonel Al Worden. Al? Yeah. Oh, we got too many chairs here. You know what, maybe we can spread out. Yeah, spread out a little bit. It looks like, yeah, yeah. Huh? Wait, you can separate, so, you know, if you like the guy next to you, you can sit next to him. If not, you can, you know. Gene, sitting down at the far end here, start us off, would you? You know, we see so many newsreel, you know, the highlights of all the Apollo and all the Gemini missions. Well, we never or rarely talk about what it takes to get to become an astronaut. We hear some of the background. But, Gene, criteria. What kind of criteria? I mean, they're all great aviators to begin with. But what is NASA looking for besides great pilots?
Well, I think the first thing they want to do is find one of these astronauts that are going to respond to a flight director. And then after that, if that doesn't work, I turn the surgeon on him.
But
no, actually, the training process in the early days was very interesting. You have to really go back into the late 50s, early 60s, and address how did we train the crews? How did we train the controllers? You know, the simulator that the Mercury astronauts had was basically what you would say a procedures trainer. It had basically a series of switches in there that represented what's inside the cockpit. And basically they provided an indication when they're flipped to an instructor at the console. So this was basically a procedures trainer. There was virtually nothing that you could do related to the mission except for the crew to follow the flight plan. The instructor at the console would do this. In the meantime, in Mercury Control, basically we had what we call a sim soup. It was very early days. And as the spacecraft would theoretically go around the world, various sites would have seen it, he'd run around and pass his pieces of paper out. And it'd go to the surgeon that says, your astronaut just had a heart attack. And we tried a surgeon would now fake it. What would he do if we had a sick astronaut in orbit? So basically the process was extremely rudimentary. It was typical, I think, of the early jet fighters they had in there, where basically you spent a lot of time in a cockpit. And basically you got your flight plan, you knew your procedures, and you basically applied the throttle and started moving forward. So that was Mercury.
Walt, even though you're all pilots, in terms of training, you're a Marine, so you went through particularly difficult early training, I assume.
Once a Marine, always a Marine.
Yes, sir. Understood. But how was the training process for you, given what you've already been through in training, for you to become an astronaut to be accepted?
Well, back in the days when I was flying, at the time I came to NASA, I was flying with the reserves because I decided I ought to go to college when I was 24 years old. So I started college there, and I was flying with the reserves. And I don't think with this audience, I ought to give exactly my reaction when I was listening to Alan Shepard's first liftoff. But I wanted to be a fighter pilot, which I was... felt quite successful at being, and it was after Alan Shepard's first liftoff, May 5th, 1961, and, I will tell the story. At that time, I was working half-time at the Rand Corporation, going to UCLA, lived in Canoga Park, had to go over to Santa Monica every morning because I was trying to earn a living. Back in those days, we did not get free college and all that. Ooh. And I was listening, it was a little before 7, I was listening to the countdown of the first Mercury mission. And when it got down to the last 5 minutes, I could not go any farther. I pulled over and parked at the side of the road on Mulholland Drive. And I'll never forget, got down to 3, 2, 1, liftoff. And I heard this voice screaming out here, "You lucky SOB." I just cut it short. And I was looking around to see who it was, then I realized it was me doing that screaming. And that was when I decided what I was going to be trying to do. And 2 years later, I was sharing an office with Alan Shepard.
Wow. Wow. Frank Borman, Frank Mann, how was the training process for you once you were selected as an astronaut to be then selected to actually fly? How tough was the process, or not?
Well, it really wasn't that difficult, but it was involved an awful lot of learning. We spent, you can hear me now? We spent an awful lot of time at the different factories, and we went to academic courses and so on, but it was basically a course in immersing yourself in a new industry. At least for me, it was new rockets. I don't know if you guys have been around rockets before. I never had been around them.
Right. So, Al, even though you've got W, right?
I'm always last.
Yeah, you poor guy.
Right.
But W, how was the process for you in adapting after the flying career?
It really wasn't a very big transition. I was teaching at the test pilot school at Edwards. I had gone through the Empire Test Pilot School in England. I worked for a guy by the name of Chuck Yeager, who was a rather interesting individual. And Bob Buchanan was the deputy, and Jay Hanks, Norris Hanks, was the head of academics there. When I got selected into the program, oh, I have to tell you, the first thing that happened is that I got assigned to Wally Schirra. And Wally was a captain in the Navy, and I was a captain in the Air Force, and I went in and let him know that we were both captains, and so I really didn't have to worry about what he had to say. And I found out I found out that I was very quickly sweeping his floor and getting him coffee, because that's what happens to greenies, that's what happens to newbies at down in Houston. We weren't worth much until we made a flight, but I didn't see a lot of transition for me, because one of the first things we did was we got checked out in T-38s, so we started flying, and then we went through a classroom session of about 6 months. And after that, got signed to an engineering program on Apollo 9. And, of course, when we had the fire at the Cape, I was on the recovery engineering group at the manufacturer. And so there was a lot of engineering to do, and that would have been the kind of engineering I would have done anywhere. So it was only after all of that that I really saw some differences. Got assigned to Apollo 12 backup and then Apollo 15 prime crew, and it was quite different.
Wow. Gene Kranz, in the video, I talked about the fact that each mission was built on the successes and lessons learned from the mission before. How much was learned from Mercury leading into Gemini, and how successful was that process to get to the two-man flights in Gemini?